Hello, and thank you for downloading Witness from the BBC World Service. And as part of our series leading up to Britain's royal wedding, we take you back over 70 years to the day that Edward VIII gave up his throne to marry Wallis Simpson. Michal Hussein reports.
It's 1936 and Edward has become Britain's new king. Already in his 40s but still single, he's the world's most eligible bachelor. But this is about to change, as Pathé News first reported to its American audience.
Today the American press is filled with rumours of royal romance, of the possibility of King Edward marrying Mrs. Wallis Simpson. King Edward and Mrs. Simpson have been pictured together on many occasions, and in this topsy-turvy world, it may be time for an American woman to marry a British king.
What attracted Edward to Wallis, he later wrote, was that she seemed genuinely interested in who he was. As for Wallis, years later she revealed in a BBC interview that it was Edward's energy that seduced her.
He had lots of pep, and I think he was very much ahead of his time. Though I thought he was very interested in everything that was going on, and do not only ceremonials, but to go down among the people, which to me as an American is what I'm used to people doing.
But Wallis was a twice married woman, an unsuitable choice for a man who was also head of the Church of England. This proved too much for the British establishment, already annoyed by Edward's populist approach. They insisted he chose between marrying Wallis and the throne.
Against the marriage stands the Church of England. Bishop Stiers, one of its highest dignitaries, explains the church's stand.
To safeguard the family, our church must oppose the remarriage of divorced persons. We hope that His Majesty will be willing to make a great personal sacrifice for the sake of the people he has been called to lead.
At long last, I am able to say a few words of my own.
Only 10 months after becoming king, Edward abdicated.
I have found it impossible to carry the heavy burden of responsibility and to discharge my duties as king as I would wish to do, without the help and support of the woman I love.
And so Edward became the Duke of Windsor. Now free to marry, the couple turned their attention to the preparations for their wedding. A small castle south of Paris, the Château de Condé, was chosen for its discretion. Julie Pellegrin is the current curator.
The royal family, the government, and Wallis herself wanted a place where they could hide to have finally this wedding. Nobody of the royal family came. No member of the government. There were only 16 guests, which is very few for a royal wedding.
The couple asked an up-and-coming photographer, Cecil Beaton, to come to the chateau the day before the wedding to take their picture, as he recorded in his memoirs.
When I arrived at the chateau, swarms of journalists and their vans and motorcycles waited outside the gates. Wallis hovered about in yellow, slightly more businesslike than usual. With her face showing the strain, she looked far from her best. The Duke, by contrast, seemed radiant, his hair ruffled gold, his complexion clear and sunburnt, his blue eyes transparent with excitement. Marriage in Westminster Abbey should have been his birthright, yet now he beamed contentedly at the impromptu wedding arrangements set up in the music room.
Edward had wanted his brother to be his best man, but the new King George VI wouldn't come. So he asked his friend Edward Metcalfe, also known as Fruity, to step in. Fruity's wife, Alexandra, wrote in her diary how on the eve of the wedding the mood darkened as Edward received a letter from his brother telling him that his wife would not be given the title of Her Royal Highness.
Her not being made Her Royal Highness was the worst blow. When he knew this, he said he wanted to give up his own title. The bitterness is there, all right. He had an outburst of Fruity while dressing for dinner. The family is through with. The friends, staff, have also been awful. Wallis said she realised there was no insult they hadn't tried to heap on her.
Nor would the new king allow a royal chaplain to perform the wedding. In the end, a little-known Anglican vicar, the Reverend Anderson Jardine, came forward, having read about the couple's difficulties in the papers.
This roused my anger, and I determined that if possible to give him a religious ceremony, he should have it. Therefore, I contacted with him, and my offer was gratefully and gladly received. I think it's a scandalous state of affairs that he who was King of England and head of the Church should be denied the privileges of the Church when he wished them.
Cecil Beaton described the last-minute preparations.
Now, the clergyman wanted an altar, of course. The chateau was scoured for a suitable table. At length, the chest from the hall was chosen. It promised to be just the thing, a heavily carved, vastly ornate affair of no particular period, with a row of fat female figures holding up bogus Renaissance carving. The Duke, like a little boy home from school for holidays, in staccato tones would exclaim, "Marvellous! That's marvellous! Couldn't be better! But put it further back! Put it here! There! No, a little more this way!" And completely lacking in self-consciousness, he would get down on hands and knees to tuck the carpet under the altar.
The wedding took place on the morning of the 3rd of June, 1937.
Wallis Simpson couldn't wear a white dress. She had been twice married, and she loved light blue very much, so that's the colour she chose. So she wore the blue Wallis dress. This colour became famous because of Wallis. And she was also wearing a strange hat with a pink and blue feathers. It was unusual, and especially for an important wedding.
I felt all through the ceremony I must be in a dream. It was hard not to cry. In fact, I did. It could be nothing but pitiable and tragic to see a King of England of only 6 months ago, an idolised king, married under those circumstances. And yet, as pathetic as it was, his manner was simple and dignified, and he was so sure of himself in his happiness that it gave something to the sad little service which is hard to describe. He had tears running down his face when he came into the salon after the ceremony. If she occasionally showed a glimmer of softness, took his arm, looked at him as though she loved him, one would warm towards her. But her attitude was so correct. The effect is that of a woman unmoved by the infatuated love of a younger man. Let's hope she lets up in private, otherwise it must be grim.
After a simple buffet meal, the newlyweds left the chateau to catch a train to Austria, where they spent their honeymoon. They never came back to Condé. Despite the strains of their wedding day, Edward and Wallis said theirs was a happy marriage.
I wish it could have been different. Naturally, you've had some hard times, but who hasn't? So you just have to learn to live with that. But I have great fun. We've been very happy.
Oh, that's right. So I do not have any regrets.
Edward and Wallis were married for 36 years until his death in 1972. It was only when she died that Wallis finally joined the royal family, as she was laid to rest beside her husband in the royal mausoleum in Windsor.
Witness was presented by Michal Hussain. For details of our complete range of downloads and our terms of use, go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.